I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome back to Radio Times. Catholics in Sri Lanka and the Philippines cheered Pope Francis during his visit to Asia last week. An estimated 6 million celebrated an outdoor mass in Manila in very bad weather before he left and returned to the Vatican. Before his trip, the Pope nominated 15 new members to the College of Cardinals, most of them from developing countries. Right before Christmas, he told Vatican administrators that they cared too much about power and worldly possessions. Pope Francis is credited with helping to bring about the recent thaw between the United States and Cuba. He'll be in Philadelphia in September for the World Meeting of Families. While Pope Francis is enjoying popularity inside and outside the church, he has not exactly won over conservative Catholics. We have two guests who have joined us in this hour of Radio Times. And here with us in our Philadelphia studio is Rocco Palmo. He writes the blog Whispers in the Loggia. He's former U.S. correspondent for the London-based Catholic International Weekly, The Tablet. Rocco, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great being back, Morty. Thanks.
You're very welcome. And joining us from Rome is Phil Pallella. He covers Italy and the Vatican for Reuters. In fact, was with the Pope in Asia. And Phil got a nice rest today, and thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Great to be with you.
Why was
Great
it
to be with you. I am a little tired. I must say, I woke up 15 minutes ago. We were working 20 hours a day, and then we had a 15-hour flight back. So it's been a little bit of a whirlwind. But here we go.
Well, here we go.
Hey, Phil.
Yeah, Phil. Would you?
Hi, Rocco.
And I know the two of you know each other. Phil, would you say it was a successful trip? What did the Pope want to accomplish in Asia?
Well, yeah. I mean, as journalists, we're not supposed to say whether something was successful or not. I certainly think from his point of view, it would be successful. From the church's point of view, it was successful. There was a rather large crowd, as you mentioned. What did he want to accomplish? Catholicism is still relatively small, actually very small in Asia, about 3% of the entire region of the Asia and the Pacific, but rather large in Philadelphia. More than 80% of Catholics in that country are Catholics. It makes it Asia's only Catholic country. The turnout was very, very large, and I think the message got across. I think he got his message across. I think from their point of view, it would be was very successful, and I think that he enjoyed himself as well.
What do you say, Rocco? What was the Pope's message? And he had several, I think, to people, certainly in the Philippines and in that part of the world.
Yeah, Morty, I think we have to look at this not in the context so much of the trip itself, but the whole leitmotif, if you will, Francis's pontificate. About a year and a half ago, he issued a document called Evangelii Gaudium, which is essentially his manifesto of what he wants to do as Pope, where he wants the church to go. And the whole core of his message, even from the time of his election, has been that the church has to go to what he calls the peripheries. You know, places far from the centers of power or influence or prestige. And that's where you can find – that's where the real church is, a church that goes out amongst its people where everybody pitches in together. And for him, Asia, mostly because of the minority Catholic population, but even in the Philippines, you have a mission-oriented church that isn't looking at rule books. It's just looking at people's lived experiences that does that. Most powerful example, he didn't want to go to the Philippines so much for the crowd of 6 million in Manila, even though that was great and a record for the papacy all the time.
Apparently, yes.
Mother largest crowds in the history of humanity. But he wanted to go principally to visit the survivors of Typhoon Yolanda, or Haiyan, the strongest recorded storm on land that hit there in 2013. And even on Saturday morning, and Phil, I don't know if you were there for this part, but he went to visit, you know, Tacloban, the city that was ground zero. And they were under another typhoon warning.
Wow.
60-mile-an-hour winds, you still had 500,000 people out there. And some people were saying to the Pope, you got to cancel. You can't go. He said, I came here to do this. I'm going to do it. And he ended up having to put on a poncho for the mass at the airport, windswept airport, and ditched his prepared homily, gave a text from his heart being translated in real time from Spanish to say, I don't know what to say to you. All I know is that I need to be here with you and that God loves you and he's with you and he's going to walk with you. It was magnificent.
Phil, let me quote something that and it may not be a perfect translation, but something that the Pope said when he was I believe when he was in the Philippines, he says, so too in our time, God calls upon us to recognize the dangers threatening our own families and to protect them from harm. We must be attentive to the new ideological colonization. What does the Pope mean by that, Phil?
Well, he was talking about, I'll let Rocco do some of the interpretation of this, because I think that his background is better placed for that. But I think that basically what he was talking about, he used this phrase several times during the trip. And the first one was, if I remember correctly, during the meeting with families, where again, he, for the most part, ditched his prepared speech and spoke from the heart through a translator. I'd like to say something more about that technique later on.
Sure.
But what he's referring to many things, particularly that in that event, because we did ask the spokesman later on to give us the official line, so to speak. He was talking about threats to the traditional family. The spokesman was specifically asked, does this refer perhaps to gay marriage? And he said, yes. It refers to a number of things that are threatening the traditional family. On the way back, he wanted to expand on that. And we were also told, even before we left, that he wanted to expand on that and that the Vatican wouldn't mind if someone asked him a question about that on the plane. And it was asked by a German reporter, and we were told that what the Pope responded to the German reporter with a very specific example that he recalled, we believe it was in Argentina. He didn't say specifically that there was a government education minister that he knew about, who had received an offer of a loan to build schools in a poor area. And he said, sure, we need the money to build schools in poor areas. And the condition of the loan, he was immediately told, was that the libraries in those schools had to stock a book, he said, about gender theory.
Hmm.
And he pointed to both of these things in two distinct speeches as an example of ideological colonization of the family. I think one could interpret both of them put together as what could be seen or perceived as attempts by developed countries, rich countries, and international organizations of trying to influence what the family should be in poorer nations. And what he also said was how they were trying to influence the feelings and the morals of young people. Because on the plane going back, he specifically, and rather strong connection, said that the attempt to influence young people reminded him of what the Nazis did in Germany with Hitler Youth. He specifically said Hitler Youth. And in Italy with the Balilla, which was basically the equivalent in Italy during the fascist dictatorship of Benito Mussolini of the Hitler Youth. So he basically said, we have gone through this before.
Well, and I'm going back actually to something that you have in your Whispers in the Loggia. Beware of the new ideological colonization that tries to destroy the family. It's not born of the dream that we have from God and prayer. It comes from outside, and that's why I call it colonization. Much has been made of the Pope's use of that phrase. How do you see it, Rocco?
Well, it's interesting, Maury. Again, that was in the part that was not in the prepared speech. That was something that he added on, and is Father Lombardi, his spokesman, explained afterward, when the Pope feels very strongly about something, he, you know, just will take – and he does this every day in his daily homilies at the Vatican, scraps the text and goes. But, one part of it was same-sex marriage, and he talked about – he used the line Friday night it's growing efforts on the part by some to redefine the very institution of marriage by relativism, culturally ephemeral. But the other key point was – I think he was talking also about population control and, again, like IMF grants and that kind of stuff, the call for sex education, which in the context of the Philippines is very controversial. There was a bill in the Philippines 2 years ago that legalized contraceptives there for the first time.
That's right.
And that allowed – that also mandated sex education, to which the church was furiously opposed. It's been much like the HHS contraceptive mandate in this country and the opposition of the bishops here. But also it's very interesting because he talked about – Paul VI, the Pope who wrote the most controversial papal document of modern times, Humanae Vitae, you know, reaffirming the Church's ban on contraception and saying that Paul VI was a great prophet to stand up to this, you know, to stand up for the truth, you know, as Francis said. But it was interesting, too, that as he gave it, the visit organizers know this, he was wearing a stole that was originally – that belonged to Paul VI, who I think is his favorite pope, who actually rushed to beatification last year, the step before sainthood. But also, too, it was powerful, and this is only something we would see from Pope from the developing world. When he talked about colonization, he talked about – he said our peoples were able to resist this.
Meaning?
Not a pope from the first world, not a pope from the global north. He said our peoples were able to resist it before, and we need to be able to resist it again and just say no. It was a potent statement.
Well, and it sounds like from the two of you that he's saying no to gay marriage, and he's also saying no to – birth control.
Well, that's not, neither of which has been a surprise. You know, he said we don't – in his famous 2013 interview with the Italian Jesuit priest, Father Antonio Spadoro, first time he gave an open-ended interview, he said we don't need to be talking about these things all the time, abortion, gay marriage. He said but you have to speak about them in a context, and the context is accepting the gospel and then going to the moral consequences that flow from it, which in the case of the Philippines, that church has accepted the gospel. It's an evangelizing church, so you can talk about moral issues. In the context of a secularized United States or Western Europe, you can't because people, you know, by and large have not accepted the faith or only do so culturally.
Well, and Phil, you know, it's interesting to try to parse what the Pope has said because famously he said on a trip back from, I think, his hometown home country of Argentina, saying asked about gay marriage or gays, saying, you know, who am I to judge? So I guess trying to figure out if the Pope is standing true to Catholic doctrine and holding the line on things like gay marriage.
Well, yes, he said that. In fact, he on the way back from Brazil, he has not been to Argentina yet, as Pope. He's going to be going next year, he told us. Well, what he said specifically, who am I to judge, he did say as part of that answer, and I hope I am quoting from memory correctly, if a person is of goodwill and seeking God, and is gay, who am I to judge? Now, if you want to pack the whole thing in there, basically the Roman Catholic teaching on homosexuality is that homosexuality is not a sin. Homosexual activity is a sin. And so you've got it packed all in there. If that person is seeking God, that is trying to live by the Church's rules, and then who am I to judge? There's quite a bit in there. But he is not changing doctrine, as Rocco says. But one of the things that I found interesting when he did speak about contraception on the way back, and speaking of Paul VI, he called Paul VI.
You know, Phil, if you don't mind, only because we have to take a very short break, and they're playing my song, which means we have about 20 seconds before that break, and I don't want you to start the story and have me interrupt it midstream. Phil Pallella covers Italy and the Vatican for Reuters. Rocco Palmo writes the blog Whispers in the Loggia. We're talking about Pope Francis. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. We are talking about Pope Francis. Just got back from his trip to Sri Lanka and the Philippines. He will be in Philadelphia in September for the World Meeting of Families. He's been a very busy pope. That's quite an understatement. I'm talking with Rocco Palmo, who he writes about the church for his blog, Whispers in the Loggia, and with Phil Pallella, who reports on the Pope and Italy for, or the Vatican, I should say, and Italy for Reuters. Phil Pallella joining us from Rome. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Marty Moscoane. We want to know what you think about Pope Francis, and looks like he is an exceedingly popular pope both inside and outside the church. Phil, I had to interrupt you as you were just about to tell us a story. Go ahead.
Well, I was saying that that when he did speak on the way back from Brazil, which was the first sort of freewheeling press conference aboard the plane that has now become a trademark of his pontificate. He did use that phrase: "If a person is gay, if a person is has goodwill as seeking God, who am I to judge?" And gay, that famous phrase. He packed a lot in there. Rocco was saying before about not changing doctrine. He is not changing doctrine. But I think one of the key points of this pontificate actually coincides very, very well with what the theme of what the trip to the Philippines, which was mercy and compassion. So on the plane coming back, from this trip just last night, he said he spoke about Paul VI in a large section of what he said about Paul VI. And just to bring your listeners up to speed, Paul VI is the author of the very controversial encyclical in 1968, Humanae Vitae. Rocco mentioned it before, that enshrined the Church's position against contraception, very controversial. He called him a courageous man earlier during the trip. He called him a prophet. But what's interesting also is that when he was speaking about contraception in that section last night on the plane, he also spoke about Catholics having a dialogue, use that word, with their pastors. And what do we read into that? What I think it means is that he said Paul VI told the priests to be compassionate. So basically, the message there is that, you know, the rules of the Catholic Church are not easy to follow for everybody. He encourages priests to be compassionate with the many people who cannot follow the rules. I'm not going to reveal any secret if I say that, you know, polls show that the majority of Roman Catholics do not agree with the birth control, the ban on artificial birth control. And he knows that much more than I know. And this is an issue for Catholics, and he basically is saying, you know, that the priests have to show compassion for these people.
Well, and I wonder too, to you, Rocco, whether, and it's true certainly for American Catholics, is that most of them do not follow the restrictions or the teaching on contraception, but most apparently use contraception. But whether this is a problem for the Church, or whether because of Pope Francis's popularity, people are sort of willing to overlook this part of Church doctrine.
Well, you know, remember, Marty, that the doctrine, you know, it is the rule book, if you will, but it's the gold standard. It's the thing, you know, at least as we believe, you know, it's something you're supposed to shoot for, but, you know, all of us are sinners, which means all of us fall short. And so I think what Francis has been doing is not so much changing the teaching, but changing the emphasis and saying, okay, you know, you can't – if people are coming to the Church and saying we're suffering or we're hungry, you know, you don't hit them over – you don't give them the catechism and say, okay, this is going to feed you. You know, to use his line, you start with the person. And one word he uses most often, as Phil said, was part of the theme of the Philippines visit, is mercy. But basically, mercy, again, to use another line of his, it does not mean cheap grace, and it doesn't mean saying there is no sin. It's being understanding of it and realizing that we all walk together. We're all going to have an area where we're going to slip up. And, you know, what's the point of following the rules if you don't have what the whole thing the rules are about, which is a living relationship with Jesus Christ? And that's the key, you know, that he's looking at.
I said in my intro that he hasn't won over, a number of the kind of conservatives within the Catholic Church. Is that a pretty fair description, Rocco?
Well, it depends on, you know, there are different kinds of conservatives. You have your kind of moderate political conservatives, and then you have, you know, kind of liturgical traditionalists who don't accept or give lip service maybe to Vatican II. And I mean, so you have to look at it in degrees. But I think the issue is, a lot of commentaries made it one of ideology. I think it's more to the core of Francis's message and to the core of a conservative understanding of the Church is the centrality of the institution. Especially, again, going back to the Evangelii Gaudium, Francis says we are so obsessed with, you know, these rules and these protocols and this prestige and assets and buildings. He said that is not the Church. The Church is the living faith of people. You know, a source of mine who was involved for many years in the selection of bishops once told me very candidly that the prime under John Paul II, Benedict XVI, the prime quality they were looking for was predictability.
Oh, and people predictability.
Who would be, and for someone who is so unpredictable, and even those of us on this beat wake up every day not knowing what he's going to do. There are no more leaks the way there used to be, or very few. That is the shock to the system.
You know, I ran across a quote from it's a Rhode Island bishop, Thomas Tobin, who said Pope Francis is fond of creating a mess, mission accomplished. Even Archbishop Chaput here in Philadelphia criticized the Pope, saying confusion is the devil.
He criticized the media. He did not criticize the Pope. He criticized media reports of the Synod.
Oh, okay. All right. But nonetheless, these are powerful people. Certainly Bishop Tobin, who says Pope Francis is making a mess.
Well, Francis actually used that line in Rio. He said, I want the church to, in Spanish, hacer lío, haga lío, which more literally translated means raise hell. Go out, to be disruptive, not for disruption's sake, but to basically get out of this whole institutional, he uses this line, I don't want the church to, should not be shut, priests should not be shut in their sacristies, the little room off the altar where you dress for mass. You should be out with the people. And so he was quoting back to Francis. Phil, I guess you want to add some stuff here, but it's, but that comes from the, but again, it's a misunderstanding of what that concept is.
You agree with that, Phil?
No, I'd like to just basically make some say. When church leaders, as a reporter who is a sort of a lay organization and someone who tries to be as impartial as possible in covering this institution, I must say that I do not agree or I reject accusations when bishops of the church or anyone else accuse the media of getting it wrong. It's just too easy. Okay. During the synod, it was very, very clear that what was being said inside the synod. We were working on a document, that preliminary document, which came out, which was a tremendous opening. We did not get that wrong. You put a piece of paper in front of me, and it says, the sun will rise in the east tomorrow. I'm going to report the sun will rise in the east tomorrow. If then you want to say that the sun's going to rise in the west tomorrow, then you can say that. But sometimes the church blaming the media for getting it wrong is part of the game. It's okay. It's what we can deal with that. Professional reporters can deal with that. It usually goes in one ear and out the other. But sometimes that happens a little bit too much, and the synod was an example of that. And I just wanted to get that off.
Yeah, sure, yeah, sure.
The other thing is that because we were talking about, particularly in the United States, Rock was talking, you were talking about conservatives and liberals, and I hate to use, I try not to use labels at all, but everyone is using this pope. And so basically you have issues where people are already taking him and saying, he's on our side, he's not on our side. And one example, and then you may want to get into this later on, is climate change. Even before this trip started, now he did speak about climate change several times during this trip, and we specifically asked him about it on the flight that was going from Sri Lanka to the Philippines. But even before that happened, there was tons of stuff written in the American media that I saw from here where everybody knows what he's going to say in this encyclical. Well, I'm making an appeal to all the listeners. If you have a copy of that encyclical, please send it to us.
Yeah.
Says, oh, really? Okay.
He says he hasn't finished it yet.
Okay.
And yet already people know what he's going to say. So it's very, very easy to cover the Vatican from to analyze the Vatican from 3,000 miles away. But it's a little bit more of a daily chore for us to a labor of love, I would say, to cover it from here. So it's actually very interesting to see this conservative liberal split on something which even, just deciding what a baby looks like before it's even born, essentially.
Well, let me reintroduce you. That's Phil Pallella joining us from Rome, covers Italy and the Vatican for Reuters. Just got back. He was accompanying the Pope as he was in Asia visiting Sri Lanka and the Philippines. And we are talking about Pope Francis and the Catholic Church. Here with us in our Philadelphia studio is Rocco Palmo. He writes the blog Whispers in the Loggia. And we'd love to hear, especially from the Catholics in our audience. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Go ahead, Rocco.
Back to the topic of the Senate, because really the most crucial event for everything else that's going on this year is the second part of a Senate church gathering that Francis has given a 2-year process to dedicate to questions of the family. The next one will be right after his trip here. It'll be in for the first 3 weeks of October. But it's looking at, and this, you know, the first one was kind of the prelim just to set the parameters of discussion. But after the next one, Francis will be given concrete proposals on things like perhaps loosening the permissions for divorced and remarried Catholics, civilly remarried Catholics, without annulment to receive the Eucharist, or changes, significant changes to the process of annulments. The church's pastoral handling, not a question of teaching, but concrete suggestions on how do you deal with gays and lesbians in the church. And Francis is going to be given all this and have to deal with it. But again, you have people both on the left and on the right talking about things that haven't happened yet. And Francis wants this to be a process. Same thing with the climate change encyclical. He said he's probably going to be out before the summer break from the Vatican in June. Well, whatever kind of summer break we get these days, right, Phil? So that's going to be the event to watch, though.
Well, and Phil, I'm looking actually at a piece that you wrote, headline, Pope says climate change mostly man's fault. And this is you quoting the Pope. The Pope, we have in a sense lorded it over nature, over sister earth, over mother earth. I think man has gone too far. Thank God that today there are voices that are speaking out on this. That's a pretty strong statement about man's involvement in climate change.
Yes, my point was that most of the stuff, in fact, all of the stuff that was written out of the States about where he stood was written before he actually said that. That was the first time that something specific about climate change came out of his mouth. So now it's a little bit easier for people who want to try to sort of guess what the encyclical is going to say. But even before that, it was based on what other people said about people who had gone to round tables with priests and stuff like that. Clearly he is worried about the environment. When he chose those words, because we asked him specifically what member of the English language media, we decide our questions so that we ask questions that will be relevant to everybody. He chose his words very, very carefully because he said, I'm glad you asked me if it was mostly man-made, and he did say for the most part. Now, there's no surprise in the fact that he is concerned about the environment. He took his name from Francis. I'm repeating things that people already know. He took his name from Francis of Assisi, lover of nature, etc. And he said some of these things quite a few times since he was elected in March of 2003. And the lovely phrase that he used several times, he repeated it on the plane, and he's quoting an old farmer who said, God always forgives, man always forgives, nature never forgives.
Oh, interesting.
Which is a lovely phrase. So we shouldn't be surprised. But in countries like the United States and other developed countries, these issues become political issues. He's not speaking from a political point of view. He's speaking from a view of concern, of actual concern about what is happening. I don't think he really cares whether climate. He's saying, look, something is happening to nature. Let's try and figure out why this is happening, and let's stop destroying nature. Mm-hmm. He used the word destroy. He used the word deforestation. He spoke about deforestation in his own country. Going on the plane, the Vatican spokesman, during a briefing before the trip, the Vatican spokesman himself, Father Lombardi, said that he was still shocked by a visit he made to the Philippines years ago when he landed in an airport and went through these vast tracts of area that had no trees anymore. The problem is out there. So, it's good that Francis is encouraging debate.
Well, let me read an email from Peter saying, why hasn't Chaput become a cardinal? I should add that we invited the Archbishop to be a guest on Radio Times today. We've invited him in the past. He was unable to do it. Peter goes on to say, it seems like the Pope is snubbing the Archbishop. Am I wrong? I'm tossing that to you, Rocco Palmo.
Well, it's a couple things, Morty. First off, it's interesting to note that there are, as of right now, 11 cardinal electors, those younger than 80 from the United States who can vote for a Pope. The Philippines has 10 million more Catholics than the U.S. does and only two voting cardinals. For Francis, that's an imbalance that he's working to remedy.
In fact, he named 15 new cardinals.
He named 15 new cardinals, most of them from the global south, including for the first time from four countries, one of which is Tonga, which only has 15,000 Catholics. And that cardinal, new cardinal, is 53 years old. He'll be a papal elector until, God, 2043,
wow,
which is extraordinary.
Wow.
But also in the context of the United States, you have to remember that while Philadelphia has had a century of cardinals, this is no longer among the 10 largest dioceses of the United States. Miami is now larger, has never had a cardinal. Florida is now a third largest state. Only in 2007 did Texas get a cardinal for the first time, in Houston, which also has more Catholics than Philadelphia. Even, for example, even in Texas, the Diocese of Brownsville, around along the Rio Grande, has 500,000 more Catholics than Philadelphia. And the bishop there is all alone, doesn't even have an assistant auxiliary bishop. And it's interesting, too, that in the developed countries where he made cardinals, Italy, Spain, and in Latin America as well, Francis didn't name the traditional, quote-unquote, cardinalatial sees, you know, the ones that have always had a cardinal. In Italy, for example, he named the Archbishop of Agrigento, a town on the southernmost coast of Sicily, which is essentially, it's where Lampedusa is, which is where a lot of African migrants, many of whom have died, tried getting into Europe. It's almost like saying if the Pope named the Bishop of Tucson in the United States a cardinal. So that's the thing. When he names American cardinals, if he does, I think he wants the numbers to, you know, take some of our red hats and redistribute them. But who knows? And also, too, Chaput has been on the record with me and others for 20 years saying he does not believe in the practice of somebody becoming a cardinal just because they're the bishop of some place.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I have to do this to you again, Phil, only because we have to take another short break, and then we'll get back to
it.
Hang in there. We're talking about Pope Francis, the Catholic Church, and that's Rocco Palmo. He writes the blog Whispers in the Loggia. Also with us from Rome, in fact, Phil Pallella covers Italy and the Vatican for Reuters and was with the Pope when he traveled to Sri Lanka and the Philippines last week. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Phil Pallella and Rocco Palmo about what Pope Francis has been doing and what he's been saying. I should add that he will be in Philadelphia in September for the World Meeting of Families. Just got back from a trip to Asia. He was in Sri Lanka and also the Philippines. And we've got calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Send us a tweet at Marty Moss-Cohen. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Phil, I had to interrupt you again, but I know you wanted to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, about the Philadelphia not getting a cardinal this time or whatever. The mold has been broken, and under this papacy, we're never going to see it come back the way it was before. These traditional places that had cardinals just because they were cardinals in the past. This is the theme of his papacy. The spokesman said when the last batch of cardinals was announced that the Pope, I thought the word was actually very, very clever. He said the Pope does not feel chained, incatenato, I think he said in Italian, which means chained, to the rules of the past, essentially, where every city got a cardinal because it was that way in the past. Rocco said Tucson. It was actually, I would say, something a little bit more drastic than that. That it's almost like saying, you know, that the bishop of Marlboro, Massachusetts, or whatever, not Marlboro, but Bangor or something, becomes a cardinal rather than the bishop of Boston in the future. So basically, the old rules are out the window. He's sending signals. He did this in various places. The cardinal from Mexico came from some place that many people never heard of because he's on the front line with the narco traffickers, sending messages like that. But it goes beyond that because it's not just the choice of cardinals. He has talked about how he does not like careerism. And that's another mold that he's breaking. So basically, the message going across is that, for example, for Vatican diplomats, you should not expect that if you are going to the Vatican diplomatic service, you do your time in some really, really difficult places in Africa or Asia or something, and then you want to move up the career ladder, and eventually you want to become the ambassador and the nuncio in Paris, where you live like a king. So that's not going to happen anymore. If you want to forget about it, this is very much part of the Jesuit tradition. Someone reaches a position of power, like he was also in Argentina, and then or any position of power in the order, and then the superior general of the order then says, well, you've done a great job running, you know, 20,000 people in such and such an institution. Now there's St. John's High School in, middle of the woods, a place that needs a basketball coach, and we're sending you there. And you would say, whoa, I was just in charge of, 40,000 people. And now no, that's what we do. And so the whole ball game has changed. Obviously, there are going to be places that are always going to have cardinals, but the rules are out. Not only in the Vatican, but also outside the Vatican. It's changing very slowly, and there is a lot of resistance.
Rocco, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, but just one thing, even on the ground level, we're talking about the red hats being redistributed and things not going back to the way they were.
Those are the cardinals.
Yeah,
right?
But I know, but the red hats, as we call them. But even one thing Francis has done on ground level, he's heavily, heavily restricted, done everything but abolished the local title of Monsignor. Which, many Catholics, especially here in the Northeast, would know, practically the pastor of every suburban parish in, Philly and South Jersey is a Monsignor. And bishops used to give these titles, recommend priests for these titles like water, because every priest wanted to be one. And also it would be a huge moneymaker for the Vatican because for everyone you'd have to pay around a $2,000 tax for the honor to be granted. But now Francis has restricted that only priests of distinction over 65 can receive the honor, and only to the lowest of what used to be three ranks, that doesn't give you the full purple cassock. So he's basically said, is another way of kind of tamping down on careerism and clericalism in the church. But it's interesting. Priests younger than 65 can still receive a papal honor, but it's the same one given to lay people and nuns.
Oh, and to nuns. I do want to talk about nuns, but first let me get Jane from Wynwood to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Jane. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
Listen, I think our Lord got set up and sent the Pope down here. He's the voice of common sense. He talks about issues we never talk about, and I think he's exactly what we need. People are leaving the church in droves, and I think the hierarchy is in the dark ages, and a lot of things need to change. I am Catholic, but I am ashamed and embarrassed by a lot of things that happened. Pedophilia, for example, nobody ever said we're sorry. He brings things up. I think he is just exactly what we need. I couldn't say. I wrote him a letter. I told him what I thought, good and bad. I said, what good is celibacy? And also, going to communion after if you had a bad marriage and then a good one, let those people go up and receive our Lord. That's what we're doing. I mean, it's just nonsense to keep people from doing these things. It'll help make them better. End of story. I could go on.
Well, Jane, but don't leave us quite yet. But so do you attend church? Do you go to Mass?
I do. I'm Catholic. I'm not giving up. In fact, I just moved and rejoined another church, and I love it. I love the priest. Yeah, there's a lot of good, but they got to get their act together. It's just shameful.
Well, Jane, I appreciate the call, and I think Jane is not alone, Rocco Palmo, in both her love but also her frustration for her church.
Yeah, and I think that's especially, again, the Northeast, where abuse has blown up, where you've had parish and school closings like crazy, these last 15, 20 years. It's very common, and if anything— Jane and everybody, this is going to be part of the Pope's message when he comes here in September, and I wonder if people are going to be ready for it. It's basically going to say, look, I can't do this alone. The only way the church is going to be better is if, people come back, if they stay, and they, you do your part. You don't just go on Sunday, let Father do it the rest of the week and go home and watch the Eagles lose, It's that's the thing. When you look at parish, when you bring back parish and school, when parish and school closings happen, it's not because the church wants to make people suffer. It's because people stop going. But they need a reason to come back. And he's given them that.
Here's an interesting tweet from Kelly the Pope at a crowd of 6 million in Manila, Philly. What are we going to do? And Rocco, what you were saying is that this is an area that has lost Catholics, whether they've moved out or they're just not going to church anymore.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Archdiocese now claims a number of 1.1, 1.2 million. It used to be 1.6 not all that long ago. But also, when you look at the mass attendance rate on any given weekend here in Philly, it's around 18%.
18%.
Nationally, it's 27%. It's higher in the South than the West. But it's, you know, but again, what's going to be the long – it's not – if it's just a three-day party to say, oh, how wonderful we are, it's a failure. If it has to reinvigorate, it has to relaunch the church here in Philly. But again, that's not just something the Pope can do on his own. It's something everyone here has to do together.
Phil, I'm going to pull out a couple things that the Pope said. This was in response to the attack, the terror attack in Paris on Charlie Hebdo. And he certainly decried the murder that anyone would commit in the name of God. But he also said, one cannot provoke, one cannot insult other people's faith, one cannot make fun of faith. I mean, he was saying basically, you cannot criticize faith. You cannot criticize a church. You cannot criticize perhaps his church as well.
Well, no, I think the operative word is what he used is insult. I think there was quite a bit of misinterpretation of the first time he said that, which was on the first flight between Sri Lanka and the Philippines, because he used this gesture of throwing a fake punch at the person who was sitting beside him, standing beside him, who was one of his assistants, and basically said, if Alberto says a curse word against my mother, he can expect the punch.
Not turn the other cheek, right? But expect a punch.
Well, yes. I mean, basically saying is that, you know, you not condoning any form of violence, but saying we should not be surprised if something like this can happen, because you've got to be careful. Freedom, there's a delicate balance mm-hmm. between freedom of speech and insulting someone. Now, clearly, I think, you know, if some magazine somewhere did some cartoons which were very, very insulting, say, of, Jesus and Mary, for example, clearly there may not be violent reaction, but there definitely would be reaction. We're saying this is a very sensitive area. You just can't go around insulting people's religions because for the sake of proving a point. Freedom of expression is absolutely vital, but that does not give you license to say anything you want against any other religion. He was very, very careful about that. There was some interpretation of that as justifying what had happened. He wasn't doing that by any means. So he was asked again on the second flight, and he underscored this again. Clearly, this is something which is very upsetting for everybody, and also because Islamic State has declared rather publicly that he himself or the Vatican itself may be a target. It's not easy to secure the Vatican here. It's right in the middle of Rome. If the Vatican itself was to be secured, say, as some institution in the United States, the White House or something like that, I mean, they'd have to change everything. It would not be easy to enter the Vatican, to go into St. Peter's Basilica, et cetera. It is a rather soft target, and I'm sure that they're worried about that. So you're talking about something which is very close to home here.
Let me see what Susan from Newtown has to say. Susan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marnie. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I wanted to ask your guests if they felt that Pope Francis had been influenced by, or greatly influenced by, Vatican II. And the reason I'm asking is the Pope is exactly the same age as my father. And my parents were devout Catholics. They were, went to Catholic school, went to Catholic college, and we were raised in a, Catholic household, went to church regularly. And they and their friends, I remember being very young, and they and their friends found great joy in helping to modernize the church and knowing that Vatican II would help to do that. And yet I feel that over the years they've been stymied in some ways with some of the views of prior popes. So I was just wondering if your guests
Sure.
With Pope Francis being a young man when Vatican II came out, if he felt his sensibilities were influenced by Vatican II.
Do you think they were?
Oh, absolutely, because it's interesting. All the popes since Vatican II have been influenced by it. But Francis comes from a perspective we hadn't had before in the Pope, because since John Paul II and Benedict XVI, Benedict as young priest, were participants in the council. Francis was the first pope ordained after Vatican II. He was a seminarian at the time. And so that, as opposed to having been a combatant in the game when the council was happening, you know, for him it's just reality. It's simple law. He's not going to get in any battles over the interpretation of the council, except maybe with the traditionalists who give it lip service at best. And he sees it as the, you know, really, and what so much of what he's doing, Church of the Peripheries, calling lay people to remember their baptism, shedding the triumphalism of the papacy, because the one thing Vatican II didn't reform in the church was the prerogatives and powers of the papal office. And Francis, in pursuing a strategy of collegiality, which is what the council called for, is really completing the work of Paul VI, I think, as he sees it, in completing the conciliar reform of the church and furthering it.
Phil, you mentioned the nuns, and we all know about the nuns on the bus here in the United States. What is the relationship between those nuns that want to play a larger role in their church and the Pope himself?
Are you asking me?
I am, Phil. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the things that he said on the plane as well. He spoke to when that little girl, a 12-year-old girl, was in tears. He said that the only person there were not enough women in that crowd of the representatives there, and he said the next pope that comes to Philadelphia, I want to see more women here, and I should see more women representing you. And he has said that he does want to give women more qualified women greater roles inside the Vatican. And I think that we will see this. There are a number of nuns who already work in the Vatican and do have lower level jobs, and there's one who is the head of a department. I think we will see more of that, and he definitely wants to do that. There are certain higher level positions that because of the teaching of the church are still open only to men. I think that he is actively looking for people who can fill these positions, and they're there. I think it's just a matter of time, and I do think that this year there will be one or two surprises. He's also said several times, on the other hand, that it's not just a question of, he doesn't want women to sort of enter this male-dominated church and become like the rest of them, you know? He doesn't want to sort of say, okay, fine, now we've got a position of power there, then everything is cool. It's not that. It's much more than that. It's not just because, oh, I have this title now. I'm the head of a department. He wants to bring a female perspective to these offices inside the Vatican and beyond. He wants them to have some decision-making powers within their areas of expertise in these departments, but not just to sort of say, you know, okay, we've got one there now.
Sure.
And sort of
you know, Phil,
it becomes careerism like the rest of the church, and he doesn't want that.
Indeed, and we're almost out of time here. Rocco, I see all these positive callers and comments as well. And the Pope has enjoyed pretty unbelievable popularity since he became Pope almost 2 years ago. Can he sustain that, do you think?
I think the frame is already set. So, you know, it's the narrative is set. And the amazing thing, too, is that how this dour guy who looked exhausted and was getting ready to retire 2 years ago when he was elected has just – the people who are most shocked at this transformation in him are the Argentinians, because
they
say, you were never like this.
Oh.
So buckle up, and you can see him for yourselves on the Parkway in September. Let's get ready, folks.
Indeed. Rocco Palma, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio
Anytime,
Time.
Anytime, Mart. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. He writes the blog Whispers in the Loggia. Phil Palillo, thank you for getting up from your nap there in Rome and joining us on Radio Times as well. He covers Italy and the Vatican for Reuters.
See you soon, Phil.
Yeah, thanks very much. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscow, and thank you so much for joining us.